Welcome into the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin. We're looking very springy today. Like little Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Skinny Easter, Justin.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Some
like
pastel.
A little bag of mini eggs.
It's about that time.
Oh, yeah. I will go through many bags of mini eggs.
Is that like a top?
It's top.
Five snack?
Yeah, I think it is.
Seasonal snack?
I used to put them on my laptop and line them up. And then, like, when I was in, like, university.
What?
Hold on. I was in university. I'd line them up on my laptop on the little ledge. And every time I finished a page of an essay, I'd reward myself with one.
A page?
Well, I had to write big essays at a big school like that. Maybe I was, like, a paragraph. But
different standard, Ivy League, okay?
Yeah. No, they used to be my little treat.
Okay.
I love mini eggs.
Now you just write zero pages.
Now we just
finish
like
the bag.
That's correct. We're up for an hour and a half here. We'll be doing the pregame for Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Portland and Toronto Raptors, a 7:30 start. So we'll shift over there in an hour. We'll have Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette join us in about 30 minutes. We've got Boston and Montreal, a big game tonight on the network. It's a 7 p.m. start. Anaheim and Calgary on Sportsnet 1 a little later tonight, 9:30, and to help tee all of that up. Oh, and Edmonton and San Jose, sorry, as well. Sportsnet West, a 10:30 start. To tee all of that up and more, we will bring in our friend Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Hi, Frank.
How are you guys?
You didn't get the spring color memo, eh?
No, I'm definitely not a big mini eggs guy.
Wow. What do you indulge in?
I might go for a Reese's, or as you guys call it, a Reese. One of those egg-shaped peanut butter cups.
What is correct there, by the way?
Reese's.
Not that we're doing an ad, but like
Reese's.
Canada or United States in this regard?
Don't know. It's like Mazda or Mazda. You guys have a lot of really
Mazda?
Weird.
Who is saying Mazda?
Who's saying Mazda?
Everyone in this entire country and on every commercial.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Figure it out.
We got to go back to our Canada-USA rivalry between the two of us and have a pronunciation off. Well, Frank, welcome to another edition of Frank or Fiction.
Let's go.
It's time for Frank or Fiction.
I thought it would be better than that, to be honest.
Wow.
Frank times a million.
I like when I get a Frank.
Every now and again, you're going to mix in a turd. It's a fact of life.
See?
That was good.
That was really good. We've upgraded, Frank. Do you like it?
Love to see it. Let's go.
Okay.
Best opening ever, Frank or Fiction?
I think so. You're up first, Justin.
I'm going to say Frank. Okay, so Montreal and Ottawa duking it out here in a way, I guess, in the Eastern Conference wild card. But Montreal on the network tonight, impressing of late. First, Frank or Fiction, Montreal is a more dangerous opponent for a top seed in the Eastern Conference compared to the Ottawa Senators.
I think that's fiction. I think the Montreal Canadiens have tons of interesting facets to their team. They've got a Stanley Cup playoff ready offense and forward group. They've got a dynamic superstar in the making in Lane Hudson on the back end. They've got questions in net. And although Ottawa similarly has an inexperienced group when it comes to the postseason, I think Ottawa is going to be a much more difficult out based on the tenacity of their team. And also, provided that Linus Ullmark is healthy and in net, better goaltending.
Okay, I have one similarly like adjacent, since you mentioned Lane Hudson. Playoffs matter for award voting when you're doing the Calder. So if your team gets to the playoffs like Lane Hudson and maybe Dustin Wolf, that you take that into account when you make your votes for the Calder, Frank or Fiction.
Fiction, and I'll tell you why. It's not possible. Ballots are due back before the puck drop of the Stanley Cup playoffs, game one. So it's purely a regular season award. All of the awards that we vote on besides the Conn Smythe are all regular season awards.
I meant like getting your team into the playoffs.
Oh.
Sorry. Oh. Like if like Montreal gets in and Lane Hudson does it, then boom, like he gets a bit of a bump. Like Dustin Wolf gets the Flames. He gets a bit of a bump, like getting your team, to the playoffs.
No, it's okay. So I would say, and my apologies for misinterpreting.
No, it's good.
I would say that yes, it does matter. Mm. It's a Frank.
Frank.
Look, if I'll spin it from the Dustin Wolf perspective. Mm-hmm. Calgary has struggled to score so much this season that if they make it in, and I know that Wolf's numbers have not been great from March 1st on, and he's hit a bit of a speed bump here, probably due to the workload that he's been asked to play and shoulder, that if they were to somehow get in, that so much of it would be largely on the back of their goaltending. And that really matters. Hudson and the Canadians getting in would help his case. I don't know that it necessarily puts it over the top, because he's already really close as it is without it.
Okay, Frank or fiction, Alexander Ovechkin, by the time we get back on the air Monday, because we're off tomorrow, we'll have this sewn up. We'll have the goals record sewn up by Monday. He's got two games until we reach Monday next week. Blackhawks and Islanders Friday and Sunday. So three goals for Ovi, fact or Frank or fiction, I mean.
I'm going to go Frank. I'm going to say that he gets two against the Blackhawks on Friday night, and I'm going to say he gets another two against the Islanders, including the record breaker relatively early on. And to do it on home ice, I think would be incredibly satisfactory and satisfying for Caps fans, for Alex Ovechkin himself, and frankly for this entire team, who's been answering questions about this all season long. It's provided some great jet fuel for their season, but I think it would be really nice for them to put a nice bow on that and put it away for all time and get that out of the way before the playoffs begin. And as quickly as they can begin focusing on something other than that, they're going to be better off for it.
You're right about that, and it has been magical. But I guess, you know, I'm a little worried about what's going on with Washington a little bit, maybe specifically with Logan Thompson. So, Frank or fiction, the pixie dust is wearing off the Capitals a little bit, mostly because of Logan Thompson.
I'd say it's probably fiction, but there's definitely more, you know, there's some Frank in that fiction, if that makes any sense. There's a degree of me that wants to say that there's a lot of truth. But it's not just the goaltending for them that has been the secret to their success this year as part of that pixie dust. It's also the ease with which they've scored. And it's not just Alex Ovechkin having a career shooting percentage season. It's been so many other players on that team having career years all at once. And I've mentioned this a few times before, but to me, they have a lot of Seattle Kraken vibes from 2 years ago, where all these guys are just, you know, humming on all cylinders at the same time, and they feed off of each other. And that's been incredibly impressive. But what happens when you do hit a wall with that at some point in time? It may not happen this season. The Kraken just ran into better teams in the playoffs, but at some point, for a team that also hasn't sweat a lot, has not faced a ton of adversity this year, maybe some of that right here and now is also a positive.
I'll keep it with the Capitals because this week was a really interesting one, obviously with the OV chase, but also with Ryan Leonard getting his opportunity to come back against play in Boston, which was really fun, and play for the Capitals. So I'll frame it this way. Frank or fiction, Ryan Leonard will be the trade deadline boost that the Capitals waited to acquire.
I will say Frank. I think he was the most NHL-ready player not currently playing in the NHL. I absolutely love, capitalize, underline it, put it in bold, how much this Washington Capitals team has invited him in. You see Ovi at the Circle Tavern just outside of the gates of Boston College. You see basically him going out for his rookie lap and how excited they were for him. They recognize the player that Ryan Leonard and impact that Ryan Leonard can be. And when you have a team that's been this good, this consistent all year, challenging for top spot in the league, and see that in him, I think that tells you that the players know it as well.
We are playing Frank or Fiction with Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com. The Maple Leafs celebrated 9 consecutive playoff bursts last night with a big victory over the Florida Panthers. That's fiction? Why is that?
Yeah, it's fiction because in 2020, they lost in the qualifying round. And last time I checked, it's called the qualifying round because you have to qualify for the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That's why your name is in the game show.
That's right.
Because you could poke
you
holes.
The rules.
But I will digress because that's not the point of this question for Frank or Fiction.
Frank, I had to get fiction. It in though.
I've been humbled here. But regardless of the streak or record, the Leafs have they've fielded or iced competitive teams for 9 years now.
There you go.
Frank or fiction, this is the best Leafs team we've seen in 9 years.
Frank, I believe that to be fact as well. I think this team has definitely the best defense core that's been assembled over this last stretch of this core. I think they've got fewer questions in net than they've ever had. And I think what's really interesting about all of those things is that you'd probably take a look at the season that Austin Matthews has had and say that this is arguably the most disappointing of his career. And with that happening all at the same time, the fact that this team still has the ability to win the Atlantic Division, to put themselves in a position where they can avoid the both teams in Florida in round one, not that the Ottawa Senators are going to be a cupcake, but that they've put themselves in that spot, I think says a lot about the makeup of this team. And I think that they've also got the best coaching job that they've had at any point over these last 9 years as well. So there's a lot of positives. It doesn't necessarily guarantee playoff success, but I think this iteration of the Toronto Maple Leafs is the best one that we've seen in a while.
All right, Frank or fiction, Leafs players include mostly the main core four, top six, need to be in a contract year to perform to their best.
Hmm.
I stumped him.
There might be some Frank with that fiction.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of both. I would say, look, there's no motivator like the almighty dollar. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to the idea that shorter term deals are better for both team and player. And it's for two reasons. One is, and I was talking to Montreal Canadiens GM Kent Hughes about this recently on my podcast. And I said, we were talking about Slafkovský and his big new deal. And I said, you know, a lot of people, fans, media, we all assume that once a player gets an enormous long-term deal that they get comfortable. And he said, no, my experience from being an agent first and then now a GM is that actually a lot of players put more pressure on themselves to live up and play to that contract. And sometimes that can be overwhelming. The idea of getting to that next negotiation point as quickly as possible, I think can be a powerful drug. So I'm going to say more fact than fiction, more Frank than fiction.
Yeah, we did a little work on this last week. Basically, Matthews is the only one who didn't have like his standout season right before signing a deal. Tavares could score 40 here in his last year, bookending the contract with 40 goal seasons, which would be unbelievably impressive. But yeah, they've all, to a certain point, stepped up to the plate when it's mattered for the contract. Let's switch to maybe a first-round opponent for the Leafs and the Florida Panthers. Frank or fiction, Matthew Tkachuk will be available night one of the playoffs.
Man, the Panthers have done a really good job keeping that information on lock. They have not shared, whispered, hinted at any timelines. I think things are trending in the right direction, so I want to say Frank. I think there was some thought a couple weeks ago that with the suspension for PEDs, that potentially that might open up some cap room to even bring him back at the very tail end of the regular season. I think that ship has probably sailed, but the fact that it was even a conversation point and they couldn't initially immediately rule it out, that I think they're in a spot where he's going to be back relatively soon, if not at the very start of the playoffs.
All right, we're talking to Frank Saravelli, a daily face-off. Okay, Frank or fiction, there should have been supplementary discipline for Chatfield in his MMA takedown on McMichael.
Frank, I understand what the rules are, that it's not technically illegal to have a takedown like that in a fight. I understand that George Parros has been in many dozens of NHL fights, and I have exactly zero, as many as you guys. And so he's certainly well qualified to judge, and there's lots of nuances to it with angling and grappling and all those other things that go with it that I'm not, leverage that I'm not certainly privy to. However, I think a message, even a one-game message for everyone else around the league to know that this is not something that's acceptable should have been sent, because I think McMichael was put in an incredibly difficult position. The fact that he was checking his head immediately gives you some indication as to how dangerous that was. And beyond that, I'm a pro-fighting guy. I always have been. I think it's a vital part of the game, not advocating at all for that to be checked. However, this is a slightly different circumstance within it, and I would have liked to have seen a one-game suspension just to send the message.
Yeah, I'm with you. Message sending in that regard, that what we saw, I think that makes a lot of sense. It's only been two games for Leon Draisaitl since he's come back, but he's shifted the odds in his favor to win the Hart Trophy for the second time in his career. So, Frank or fiction, Leon Draisaitl sewed up the award with just two games in his return from an injury.
He might have sewn it up before then, to be honest. I'll say Frank. Look, that takes nothing away from the seasons that Nathan MacKinnon, Nikita Kucherov, Connor Hellebuck have all had. They've all been incredibly impressive. But Draisaitl, the heavy lifting that he's done for that Oiler team, putting himself in a spot where he's just the having a fourth season now of 50 goals and 50 assists. I think only 10 players in the entire league's history have ever done that over the course of their careers. He's been next level, and he's been so good from start to finish at a time when, man, they've really been missing a lot. And speaking of some injury news, I do have some updates for you. It seems like Connor McDavid will be back next Wednesday against St. Louis, not playing on the rest of this trip. Trent Frederick likely to play in the last game of this road trip. So not this next one, but one after that to make his Oiler debut. And then you've got Matthias Ekholm and Stuart Skinner still to come, and Evander Kane. I mean, think about the five players that I just named. That's a totally different Edmonton Oiler team. And I said that only to give you some indication of how well Draisaitl has played, no matter who's been in the lineup.
All right. I only have one more, so I'll go.
Sure.
Okay. We've been really quizzing Frank here. David Carl, who I know you interviewed maybe 2 months ago at this point, will be the next coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, Frank or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction.
You don't think he wants to leave, go win another national championship, take the Philly job?
No, I think it's going to take a really, really special opportunity.
That's not special.
And I'm not saying that he won't leave. I'm just saying I don't think it'll be for the Flyers. Okay. I think if David Carl is going to leave, I think it's going to be for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Okay.
Oh. So Frank or fiction, he's in line for the next Blackhawks position this offseason.
Frank, he's definitely in line for that. I think if he's not number one on their list, he's going to be very high on it. And it's all going to be about whether or not they can convince him that what they're going to be putting in place over the next few years with the players that have recently debuted and others still to come, that they're going to build it together in lockstep, and that this is not going to be a situation where, hey, you come in for 2 or 3 years, we're enamored with you at the start, and then we're jettisoning you. There's a reason why when I tweeted the stats of Jim Montgomery getting fired in Boston, his predecessor at Denver, and the incredible record that he had in Boston, David Carl retweeted that because he understands that the system right now is broken.
Last one for me to conclude Frank or fiction for another, I don't know, is this a monthly tradition?
Whenever we feel like it.
Maybe every 3 weeks or so. Anyway, the Dallas Stars, Frank or fiction, will overtake the Jets for the number one seed in the Central Division and therefore the Western Conference.
Fiction. The Dallas Stars, I think, are exceptionally deep and talented. But without Miro Heiskanen, I don't see that happening.
Okay. All right. Okay. You had your top 50 UFAs for the summer released on dailyfaceoff.com. Sam Bennett, number 6. A little interesting. I don't know if that's ranked necessarily by your value or the value that is projected, but it felt like the number was a little low. Was that a Florida price tag or a open market price tag on Sam Bennett?
No, that's an open market price tag, and the projection isn't from me, but it's from our friends at AFP Analytics who do a great job. They're going to update their projections here in the next couple of weeks, their final one heading into the offseason. And so it's not just about the dollar and projection. It's also kind of a blend of interest. And you say, okay, Frank, so if that is the case, why wouldn't Sam Bennett be higher on your list? The answer for that is, until this week, he had never scored more than 49 points in any NHL regular season. And I think Sam Bennett in particular represents the toughest part about being an NHL general manager, which is you have to build a team under the salary cap to compete and get to the playoffs. And then you need to have a totally different type of team and roster that's able to slog through and grind through 16 wins in the postseason. Sam Bennett really, really helps you do the latter part. But in the regular season, he's not a consistent and reliable offensive producer at a very high level to warrant a significantly high cap hit. And that's what teams are going to have to wrestle with. There is no cap in the postseason, but there is one for the regular season, and they do go hand in hand.
All right, Frank, hope you're enjoying your 5-1 Phillies start.
It's been electric. We'll see, though. The Dodgers are coming in next.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Pretty good.
Are you going to go to any games?
I was supposed to go yesterday, but we had our first minor hockey practice of the next season already.
What? It's April.
I know. Look, I picked
a couple skates.
Let the kids go play on the swings. All right.
Trust me, no one's more beside themselves than me.
Okay. Well, take care, Frank. We'll see you next week. Appreciate your time.
See you guys.
That's Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. That's actually wild. April, you're already practicing for next year?
Well, you did like tryouts the year before.
Yeah, tryouts.
Obviously.
And then you make the team and you'll see you in
a couple
fall.
Skates. Just like familiarize yourself maybe make some friends.
I don't need to make friends.
Okay. It's
just competition.
I like
out
activities.
There. I'm sizing up my centerman for the top spot.
Oh, wow. Internal competition already.
That's okay. Right. 5-1 Phillies. I didn't realize the Dodgers, who are undefeated, are on their way
the
over.
The Dodgers
That's
are
amazing.
Incredible. 8-0 for the first time in 70 years. The only reigning champs ever to hit that mark, 8-0 to restart the season. I think there's room, though, to improve here. Not on the record, but they're hitting .233 as a club. Mookie Betts has missed 3 games. Mm. Freddie Freeman has missed 5 of the 8 games. They haven't had a single quality start from the rotation, and yet they have... 8 wins, 0 losses, have hit 18 home runs, second in Major League Baseball, struck out 91, which is first in Major League Baseball, and they've done all that in 8 games. Like, 117 wins, I think, is very, very gettable. Like, you can readjust now. Like, just take the 8 games out. 154 left. Like, what would be the winning percentage you'd expect from them? Like, 650? 2 out of every 3? Where does that get you? It gets you pretty close to 117 wins. Again, they haven't really started the engine yet, other than Shohei Ohtani, you know, hitting walk-off home runs in pretty dramatic fashion.
He doesn't miss a moment.
It's just his third of the year. Like, he's probably going to hit 50 more.
Yeah, probably.
So.
It's pretty
I don't know. This could get pretty historic here if they could get things. Everybody performing at, like, a reasonable level, the expectation, it's going to be a really high bar.
They only won 98 games last year, so just the jump to 117 sounds like...
They didn't have a rotation last year.
And
now they do.
Look at all the things you just listed out that they haven't even had in their 8-0.
It's pretty crazy.
So we should be adding Dodgers to every parlay in the future?
It might be, you know, it might have already gotten away from us.
But. Yeah. Well, I looked today, and just the Dodgers to have this historic season to win more than 117 regular season games is only plus like 350 at this point.
Yeah. I don't know how much that's changed. I wish I knew. I wish I looked at it before
I didn't
the
look
season.
At it.
Because it wouldn't have been 350. But you start 8-0, it's going to drop.
There's
because
no
it's more in view now. Like, I don't know, maybe 110 is like just the over-under, the standard over-under. The minus 110 over-under is about 110 wins probably by this point.
Yeah.
So it's only 7 more. Plus 375 makes sense.
Well, shout out to Andrew Holland, who made us that wonderful intro for Frank or Fiction.
Yeah, he's doing a tremendous job.
It's a good Sutton boy.
Yeah, good Sutton boy.
I think my dad taught him how to use the computers at Sutton High.
Did he do computer science too?
My dad did computers, and so did Holly. I assume that my father taught you there.
That's where he gets the talent from.
Yeah. Like
woodworking plus
computer
science.
We're seeing the
science.
Life cycle here.
Like, sometimes it's either or with the Forfar family and, by extension, Andrew Holland.
It's just
it's
a
both.
Big Sutton District High School moment right there.
There you go.
We will take a break in a moment, but Stu Cowan is going to join us on the other side of the Montreal Gazette. We are talking about Boston-Montreal tonight, 7 p.m. start on Sportsnet. It's been a pretty great stretch for the Habs. They beat the Florida Panthers in those back-to-back home-and-homes, which was pretty electric. I mean, we can power rank where we want to see some of these NHL series most, but I'm just so much for getting the Habs in the playoffs at this point. That arena looks unbelievable every time they play. Like, the young talent is just popping off. I'm really excited to watch it.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they could potentially do in a first-round series because the team with the best record in the Eastern Conference is not necessarily a juggernaut in the Washington Capitals.
Hey, you really, like, disrespect
and Logan
Washington
Thompson's
Capitals.
Not playing that well, and maybe he'll look at, across from Sam Montembeault and be like, hey, I should have been on that team, and I'm going to raise my level. But
maybe.
If they don't have good goaltending, that's a number one seed that's highly gettable for – a team like Montreal.
Yeah, that Four Nations turnaround has been pretty bold for the Montreal Canadiens. All right, we'll take a quick break. Stu Cowan on the other side, then we'll wrap up. We'll talk to Smith and Jones at 7 o'clock to get you set for the Portland Trailblazers and the Toronto Raptors.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. In about half an hour, we'll break. We will go to Sportsnet 590 The Fan only and talk to Smith and Jones ahead of Portland and the Raptors, and you will get your weekly Tankathon update by yours truly.
Yeah, we need that. We definitely need that. We need to bounce it's back loaded. From last time. A big, big game on the network tonight with Montreal Canadiens and Boston Bruins, talking about it a little bit here, but I'm going to tell you why I think this is one of the most remarkable seasons in NHL history from Alexander Ovechkin.
Wow. Because he broke his leg? Later.
That's part of it.
Yeah. There's a lot of factors.
He's also old. That's part of it.
Okay. Can't wait to hear your deep dive. Appreciate the efforts.
No problem.
It will be good. Let's pivot and talk about our game on the network at 7 p.m. Boston and Montreal with Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. We appreciate you coming on. Stu, how's it going?
Good. My pleasure to be here.
I wish I could see inside the Bell Center because I'm sure it's crazy in there. What's the atmosphere been like at these games? You know, I watch it through the screen and it feels like everyone's jumping out of their seats every time the Canadians get a goal and eventually get a win. It's been awesome.
Yeah, well, I find that quiet spot here right now in the ground floor of the media workroom. It's about the only quiet space around here right now. It's been pretty wild. I mean, the Canadians last time they were in the Stanley Cup playoffs is 2021 during COVID when they went to the Stanley Cup final. But the arena here was empty for most of the games and then only a couple of thousand allowed for the Stanley Cup final. It's interesting to note that the only Canadians player who's ever played a playoff game at the Bell Center in front of a full house is Brendan Gallagher, and he got to go back to 2017 for that when they lost to the Rangers in the first round. So the city's, I mean, the weather's starting to get a little nicer. Habs, you know, the goal going into the season was to be in the mix. They're sitting in a wild card spot going into tonight's game, tied with the Rangers, but they played one less game, and the city's really going crazy here. I mean, Montreal's starving for playoff action, with a full Bell Center crowd. And in some ways, it's almost like that run to the 2021 Cup final didn't happen because there was nobody in the building really to see it. But yeah, the last game was just crazy. You know, 30 seconds left, down by a goal against the Stanley Cup champs, who they've already beaten three times. Face off in their own zone, they somehow managed to tie the game with 9 seconds left, and then Nick Suzuki scores the overtime goal to win 29 seconds in, and the place just went crazy here. When they did the post-game interview with Nick on the ice afterwards, you couldn't hear him because the crowd broke into the ole ole chant. So it's it'll be crazy here tonight with the Bruins in town also.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I've never been to Bell Center for a game. I imagine it's a really high floor, but the ceiling's got to be real high too, and we're seeing that on this run here. This run started after the Four Nations. So we got a Four Nations turnaround here for the Montreal Canadiens. I want you to juxtapose like the mood among the team heading into the Four Nations versus the mood among the team during these highs since.
Yeah, well, they were 1-7-1 going into the Four Nations break, and they were basically out of the playoffs. They were 6 points behind, and they had like four teams between them and the team holding the second wild card spot. And Nick Suzuki met with GM Kent Hughes during the break and pleaded with him not to break up the team because, you know, it was Jake Evans, Joel Armia, David Savard, all eligible to become free agents, and was hoping that they wouldn't trade him. And Kent Hughes' message with Nick Suzuki was, well, if you don't want me to make any moves, you're the captain, put this team on your shoulders and start winning some games. And after the break, they won 5 in a row. Kent Hughes decided not to make any moves at the trade deadline. And Nick said after that, this is already a tight-knit team, really close-knit. But as Nick said, like for the last 3 years, trade deadline day meant his friends and teammates were getting traded away. And he didn't want that to happen again. And when it didn't happen, I think it even made the bond that this team has stronger. And it's shown in their play since then. They took a little bit of a dip, but they battled back, as I mentioned. They beat Florida Panthers back-to-back games, won all four games against the Stanley Cup champions. And at this point, I wouldn't want to be a team meeting the Canadians in the first round if they do indeed get into the playoffs.
I'm glad you started talking about Nick Suzuki there because, you know, when he was given the captaincy, he's pretty young. He's a guy that obviously hadn't fully developed as a leader yet. But I feel like this last year, we've really learned a lot about how he leads by example, but how he almost took that personal, right? Well, you want me to keep this team together? I'm going to make this my mission. This is going to be the catalyst of it all. Like, what have you learned about Nick Suzuki throughout this season on and off the ice as a leader and the heartbeat kind of the Montreal Canadiens?
Yeah, well, 23 years old, he was the youngest captain ever named when he got the position. And at the time, it was sort of between him and Brendan Gallagher. And I wrote a column at the time, I understand why they made Suzuki, because they were starting a rebuild. And at that point, we didn't know if Gallagher was still going to be here, how many years on. They wanted a young voice as captain of the team in the locker room with this young team coming up. And he's grown into the role really well, both on and off the ice. He's increased his offensive production every year. He'll probably be a point per game player this season, which will be the first time the Canes have had that since Alex Kovalev. You got to go back a long time to those days. And in the room, he's a quiet leader. He's one of those guys who doesn't speak up a lot, but when he does, people listen. He's surrounded by really good veterans with David Savard and Brendan Gallagher and Mike Matheson and Josh Anderson, guys like that. So it's a leadership group they have, and they get together for dinners quite often and discuss things, and Nick pokes their brains to find out what they're thinking. And then, but he's the leader of this team. And Kent Hughes, kudos to him. When they met, he said, "You're the captain. If you don't want me to break up this team, do something about it." And he did. And the players followed him also. So that just shows just how much he's respected both on and off the ice. Fans watching the game tonight, he makes so many smart little moves with the puck, away from the puck, 200-foot hockey player, and he's really blossomed both on and on the ice, on and off the ice, wearing the C. And it comes with a heavy weight in this city, right? Same as in Toronto. You're captain of the Montreal Canadiens. It's a big role. All these guys are recognized around town, but you're captain. It goes to an even other level. The last two summers, he's lived in Montreal during the offseason, which most of the guys don't. They usually go back to their own homes. So he's really, he's embraced what it means to be captain of this team and to become part of this city. And not knocking Shea Weber, but like as soon as the season was over, he was gone. Like he wasn't really, didn't make himself part of the community. And Nick's really done a good job of doing that here and embracing it. Like if Jean Beliveau was still alive today, he'd be proud to see the way Nick Suzuki has been wearing the C for this franchise.
So the numbers aren't necessarily on this run reflective of a truly dominant team. 5-on-5 scoring advantage is just 1 for the Canadiens, 12 goals for, 12 against on special teams. And yet they've got a pretty dominant record since then. So how is it that Montreal has created its advantages? How have they won so many more games than they've lost since the Four Nations, if the numbers kind of tell a story of a team that's, one for one in terms of one goal in and one goal out?
Patrick Laine certainly helped on the power play. He's got 15 power play goals. That's ranked second in the NHL, and he missed 30 games. So that's helped him win some games here and there. Lane Hutson has just been, this kid's going to be a superstar if he isn't already. He's a guy who drives his offense along with Nick Suzuki. And they've been able to, they've had 10 games this season. They've been trailing in the third period, and they've come back to either win or earn a point in overtime or a shootout. All 10 of those games were after Christmas. So this is a team, as I mentioned earlier, just the way this team has bonded over the years. And it's been, Marty St. Louis came in here, and this was a team down in the dumps. Guys were saying it was no fun coming to the rink anymore. And Marty went right from coaching his kids in Pee Wee and Bantam to coaching in the NHL. And his first news conference, he said, this team needs to have fun, and I'm probably the perfect guy because I've been coaching kids, which is fun. Marty has taken his time. They've been really patient rebuilding this team. They've known exactly what they wanted to do with Jeff Gorton and Kent Hughes and Marty right from day one, and they've stuck to their plan. And as Marty said, he doesn't like to use systems. He likes to use the word concepts. The concepts he wanted to put into the Canadiens game plan, it's a book he has, a thick book, but he was going to go page by page and chapter in chapter. And that's what he's done. And I asked him recently, are you getting near the end of that book? And he says, no, you keep adding chapters as you get further on. But they've bought into what Marty St. Louis has been selling. And as he has said, the two most important things as a coach are communication and being a salesman. And he communicates really well, and he's been able to sell the style of play that he wants them to play. So that's why they don't give up in games. Like, they're not out of it even when they're down 2-1 with 30 seconds left, as we saw the other night.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. So Canadians are in that second wild card spot. And, hopefully for Canada, I want to see as many Canadian teams get in. But if they don't, is meaningful hockey in April enough? I've been listening to a lot of people talk about how the Montreal Canadiens are beyond expectations this year. Nobody really thought they'd be right there yet. When's their window open? Is this the opening of the window? And is it getting to the final last week of the playoffs or the regular season with all these important games going to be enough to satiate the fan base, or will there be a lot of disappointment?
Fans will be disappointed if they don't get in, no doubt about it. I mean, Montreal is, the older Canadians guys will say they love you, win or tie, and there's no more ties in the NHL. But from the franchise standpoint, Ken Hughes and Jeff Gordon and Marty Saint would be disappointed also if they don't get in the playoffs, but they won't be upset. As I mentioned earlier, you know, the goal coming into the season was to be in the mix. I wrote a column at the beginning of the year. I thought it was a realistic goal to be in the mix. I didn't think they were good enough to make it, even if Patrick Laine had been healthy from day one. You know, the defense was young, the goaltending was questionable, but here we are. There's eight games left, and they're sitting in a wild card playoff spot. And the experience this team is gaining through these games can only help moving forward with this rebuild. And on top of that, the Laval Rocket are the best team in the American Hockey League with a new coach with Pascal Vincent. So there's a lot of reason for optimism with the Canadiens moving forward. There was a long time there when the Canadiens were no good and their farm team was no good either. So now you've got a young team in the NHL that's on the verge of making the playoffs and year three of a rebuild, which is quite remarkable, especially when you look at a team like Buffalo. It's going to be 14 years in a row they haven't made the playoffs. And also to have a American Hockey League, a young American Hockey League team that has the best record in the AHL also. So the future looks bright. And I think if they don't make the playoffs, fans will be disappointed for a few days. And I think then they'll look back and say, okay, well, we're in a good spot now. And when Gordon and Hughes took over, their plan was not to just sneak into the playoffs and like anything can happen, which is sort of Mark Bergevin's line when he was GM. They want to have a team that's going to be in the playoffs year after year after year, similar to what the Boston Bruins have been, right? This is going to be the first time in 9 years the Bruins don't make the playoffs. That's an impressive run in today's NHL.
It's likely that if the Habs get in, it will be the Washington Capitals. It'll take something pretty drastic for it to not be Washington in the first round. What does that series look like to you? How have the games gone against Washington so far? It feels like, you know, there could be some potential there because Washington, like maybe Montreal, maybe not in the position they're supposed to be in per se. Like it was a playoff team last year in Washington, but barely. It doesn't feel like they would be a overwhelming favorite, that being the Washington Capitals in a first round series versus Montreal.
No, and I agree. I'm not sure exactly what the record was this season against Washington, but I know, you know, Alex Ovechkin's obviously the key, and it's sort of interesting that Charlie Lindgren, the Capitals goalie, used to be with the Canadiens, and you know, they gave up on him a few years ago. But yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I wouldn't want to be playing the Canadiens in the first round, and almost every year in the playoffs, a number one or number two seed gets knocked out. And if the Canadiens can pass the Senators, and they're only, I think, 5 points behind going into tonight, that would mean they played Toronto in the first round, right? So we'd have a rematch of 2021. But yeah, I mean, Washington will obviously be the favorite going in, but the Canadiens, they have nothing to lose, right? And teams like that can be dangerous. A young team with nothing to lose, they would have already accomplished more than what was expected of them this season by just getting to the playoffs. And the way they've been feeding off each other in that game, the game the other night when they came back, there was something magical about that. Mm-hmm. Was someone on social media posting, you know, the Forum Ghosts finally found their way into the Bell Center. And it sort of looked that way. And, you know, after the game, a lot of the guys were talking about hockey gods. And you know, when you work so hard and you do the right things over and over and over again, the hockey gods sort of pay you back. And they did get paid back in that game, if you believe in the hockey gods. As I said, you know, 30 seconds left, face off in your own end, and you come back and score and then win in overtime. But I've written columns this year and on social media, too. I mean, there's really something special about this Canadiens team. They're all, the majority of the players around the same age. They're like brothers together. They really like each other. They spend a lot of time together away from the ice, all in the same age group. Most of them don't have kids, right? It's a little bit reminiscent of the young Oilers teams. Not that I'm saying this will be a dynasty like that Oilers team, but, you know, when you had Gretzky and Messi and all these young guys, all the same age group, hanging out together all over the place. And I think that's what they built here. And that was the plan. That was the plan. You know, when a lot of the trades that Kent Hughes has made, looking for guys in that 22, 23, 24 age group, Kirby Dach, Alex Newhook, the guys that he's brought in here, Emil Heinemann, there's a long list of them. So they're building for a team that, as I mentioned, they want to not just get into the playoffs and see what happens. They want a team that's winning the playoffs every year and be competing to win a Stanley Cup every year also. And I think they're probably another 2 years away from that. But to be where they are right now is really impressive.
Yeah, dangerous combination, a team with low expectations, but also like sudden vibes. And that's seemingly what Montreal has.
Bell Center, these guys will feed off.
And if they catch Ottawa, you mentioned it could be Toronto, could be Florida, who they dominate, could be Tampa and the rematch of a Stanley Cup final from a couple of years ago. Like the narrative also comes in and makes it like a little uncomfortable for the team that's supposed to win. And that would be the situation, I suppose, if they stay inside the Atlantic Division. I want to ask you about Lane Hutson because our producer will kill me if I don't ask you about Lane Hutson.
He's Lane Hutson's biggest fan.
Biggest fan outside Montreal, at the very least.
Yes. There's a lot of big Hutson fans in Montreal.
Yeah, I bet. Like, obviously, there were some big expectations there, and there was some worry about, okay, can he hold up defensively? In what ways has this kid, like, surprised the most? Like, what didn't you expect in year one that you are seeing in year one?
Defense. At the evaluation camp, I remember speaking with Rob Ramage, the director of player development, and you know, he's 5 foot, he's 163 pounds, right? He's not a big kid. And I was saying, how is he going to play defense in the NHL? And he said, I'm not really that worried about it because he's like a dog on the bone playing defense. He's relentless. And we've seen that. I mean, he had some hiccups early in the season and he had some problems, but he's adapted and he's just so smart. His edges are so good. He knows how to play angles. He has a great stick. He knows how to get leverage by getting down low on guys. And, you know, he's always been small, right? So he's played this way his whole life. It's not like this is something new to him. He's playing against bigger and some stronger guys now. Excuse me. But I spoke with Jay Pandolfo, his Boston University coach, this week. I spoke with him before the start of the season, too. And he said, I think he's going to be better in the NHL than he was in the NCAA because he's going to play with better players who understand and see the game the same way he does. And he's been right. And he also wasn't that concerned about defense because he said he's so smart. And there's different ways to play defense, right? Like he's paired with Caden Gooley right now, who's a big, strong, physical, tough defenseman. But they're both effective defensively just because Lane's so smart with the way he angles guys off, the way he uses his sticks and his edges. Caden Gooley told me this morning he's never seen a hockey player with better edges than Lane Hutson, just the way he skates.
Yeah, probably the Calder Trophy.
I would favorite. Think he's going to get my vote. I mean, this team is not where they are now without Lane Hutson. Yeah. I mean, he's already broken Chris Chelios' record for most assists by a rookie defenseman, which was 55. He's got 57 now. He only needs three more assists to tie the NHL rookie record, all-time rookie record. And he's 9 assists away from tying Larry Robinson for the most assists ever by a Canadiens defenseman.
It's pretty remarkable.
21 years old in his first season in the NHL. It's really, really, it's remarkable what he's done. And in this market, with the pressure in the Montreal market, everything that comes with it. And they made a smart decision. He's living with his mom in a condo near the Bell Center. And I did a column earlier this season on his mother. And she's saying just, coming to a new country, new language, right? New league, all the different variables, the fame that comes with playing here. And they thought it would be a good idea for his mom to live with him. And it has been. I mean, he's a hockey junkie. Like, that's all he wants to do. They almost have to, like, on days off, they almost have to lock the practice rink to keep him out. He hasn't missed an optional skate all year, including this morning. On days off, he's always at the rink. For the first time this season, as it was 2 Sundays ago, they told him, you cannot come to the rink today. You are not allowed to come to the rink. And I asked him the next day, like, what it was like. And he said, it was boring. I mean, it's a movie with my mom and, waited to come back the next day. He's just, he loves hockey. I don't think I've ever seen a kid in the NHL or anywhere who loves hockey as much as Lane Hutson. Can't get enough of it, and it shows on and off the ice. He's so much fun to watch, fun kid to be around. I mean, you stand beside him, and he looks like he's 15 years old, and he's not that big a kid, but what he's been able to accomplish is quite remarkable, and, like, the future for this kid is really, he's going to be a rich young man in a few years.
There you go. Tidy up your room, or it's go rip pucks at the Bell Center.
I'd rather rip pucks at the Bell Center.
I go to the ring, too.
exactly.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Stu, there's lots to be excited about in Montreal. We appreciate you coming on before tonight's game. Enjoy it, and we'll chat soon.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thanks so much. That's Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. That's exciting about Lane Hutson, that fired up for hockey.
Yeah. Dave says,
I was going to say, our
clipping
producer
that as we
is
speak.
Probably going to listen to that twice a day.
Or he'll just, like, rub it in our faces that
That's
he was
true.
First
he was
to
right.
understanding the power of Lane Hutson.
He was right. He put us on Lane Hutson.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to tell you that the Canadiens and the Capitals played 3 times this year. Mm-hmm. Canadiens beat the Caps in overtime, 3-2 the first time. They lost 4-2 to the Capitals. And then also 6-3 to the Capitals.
Okay, so advantage Capitals. Advantage Montreal right now, though, in the chase for the second wildcard spot in the Eastern Conference. They are tied on points with the New York Rangers, but they have 1 game in hand. And looking at the schedule ahead, the next 4 teams are non-playoff teams, starting with Boston tonight on Sportsnet, and only 3 of their final 8 games are against playoff teams, that being Ottawa and Toronto included. And the final game of the season is against Carolina, who may have nothing to play for at that point. So the schedule does break well here for Montreal in their pursuit of a wild card spot.
All right. That was a great chat with Stu. I hope that we get to talk more Montreal Canadiens in the postseason. I like the idea that they could be a team that has an edge or a narrative against many teams that they could face in the first round. So let's hope they get in.
Yeah, you need that hot, unpredictable team coming in.
I think that's them.
And I think the Bell Center variable
that's a factor
is something that is not only needed for the postseason, but also brings a little pressure against a top seed like Washington if and when they get there. Let me tell you about Ovi's remarkable season.
Please do.
I think it's the most remarkable season in NHL history, partly because he broke his leg and that he's old,
wow.
but 39 years of age, but he's third in NHL scoring, having been that age and having broke that leg, which is nuts. He's second in goals per game behind only the guy who's going to win the Hart Trophy and the Rocket Richard, likely in Leon Draisaitl. He's been doing this all while chasing a record too. So there's like pressure there. I know it helps him that, hey, let's get you out there for 4 minutes when the net's empty.
That's true.
But even that doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah.
Because his goals per 60 at 5-on-5 from last season has nearly doubled. So that doesn't, if you're 6-on-5, that doesn't count to that. So he's had twice the amount of production at 5-on-5 compared to last season's, also the third highest mark of his career. Goals per 60, 5-on-5. This guy is the greatest goal scorer in the history of the game, and this is his third best year from 5-on-5 scoring. And his 2.23 goals per hour in all situations is the highest mark of his career. That's nuts. Guy's 39, broke his leg.
Wow.
This is his best goals per hour season, or goals per 60-minute season of his entire career, and he's getting the least amount of ice in his entire career. That helps the goals per 60, I suppose. But that is absolutely absurd that Ovechkin is having the most productive season of his career from a rate perspective at 39 after breaking his leg.
I thought that it was going to be less impressive than that, but I am impressed. And all of that, you didn't even mention that he's eating, you know, a sub and hot Cheeto bag every single
heartburn
night.
Not an issue for
the diet. The diet per 60 has gone down.
Yeah.
And
or
the
up.
Goal scoring is going up. So, all right. Well, we might see it. We talked about it with Frank. We said Frank or fiction. By the time we're on the air next, because we don't have a show tomorrow for everyone, 3 o'clock Jays game means we are off. Back on Monday, before then, the Caps have two games, one against the Blackhawks and one against the Islanders. I think Monday we come here and Ovi's already got the goal-scoring record. I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, Frank calling him home and cool. Four goals in two games on the weekend in Frank or Fiction just a couple minutes ago.
That could be the case. Let's see if we can predict it. Let's do our best bets now before we wrap for the night. I'm going with Bunker's dog of the day. It's been a while since we had Bunker's debut or return. There he is. It's a good boy.
Not Bunker, though.
How do you know?
He doesn't. Told me
he doesn't bark. So, okay. Bunker's dog of the day are the Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, team with something to play for. A team that is playing the Colorado Avalanche tonight, who are on a back-to-back, and the Avs couldn't fly in until today at noon, which is not characteristic. So their schedule thrown off. They're not really getting their pregame nap, their pregame meal, whatever they need to do. It's a bit of influx. So the Avs on the road play the Blue Jackets. Blue Jackets hungry. Bunker's dog of the day.
Let's not forget about Columbus. Talking a lot about Montreal, but Columbus is 2 points back with a game in hand on Montreal. So they are right in it still and maybe getting an advantage in a game where they are disadvantaged going up against the Colorado Avalanche. So that would be a big victory for CBJ. I'm going to our big game on SportsCenter tonight, Montreal and Boston. Over 5.5 minus 120 tonight for me. In Montreal's last eight games, six have cleared six goals. And it feels like, despite Boston being a team that is at its best when they're playing low-scoring games, Montreal, when it gets a little wacky, seems to be at its best. And I think if those two things collide, maybe we get a game that features some goal scoring tonight. So Boston, Montreal, over 5.5, minus 120 is my play today.
Also tonight, the Blues are playing the Penguins. The Blues have won 10 in a row. We haven't spent enough time talking about the Blues. They are crazy.
Yeah.
10 in a row against Penguins.
Now what I'm cheering for is them to enter the Pacific Division side of the bracket.
Okay.
And get a second round series with the Edmonton Oilers, and you get the Dylan Holloway,
Philip
Broberg
good.
Narrative.
Yeah.
And like maybe they get through that.
Yes. Okay. We should have power ranked some of the series we want to see most. I think Battle of Ontario is going to be number one. But
yeah.
The Florida two teams going at it is great.
Montreal-Toronto,
number two, Stars, Avs.
I think there's a route there for St. Louis. If they get in the Pacific Division side, I think they could be a little frisky.
And then
Conference exactas, Dallas over St. Louis.
Wow.
Colorado over St. Louis, Winnipeg over
that Capitals-Hurricanes game last night that we talked about a little bit with Frank and the MMA moment, that one got extremely out of hand. That could be a second-round matchup possibly?
Likely a second-round matchup. Probably minus money that they meet in the second round.
Feels like there's some good hatred brewing right now in the NHL.
Yeah, we need it. The first round, the best 2 weeks of the hockey season, right around the corner.
Around
here.
The corner. Okay, right around the corner will be us chatting with Smith and Jones. They are going to be courtside as the Raptors take on Portland, a 7:30 tip. So we'll do a little pregame chat with them. I'll do my weekly tankathon and see where the Raptors may lay. And then we'll go through a couple stories before we wrap for the weekend.
The week, yeah.
The week. Lucky week for us. Thanks to the Blue Jays for playing at 3 p.m. We appreciate it. All right. We'll see you in about 5 minutes on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Have a great night.